The Japanese were not alone in rapidly absorbing the lessons of the first clashes of the Russo-Japanese War. The Russians, of course, were also observing these early developments with considerable interest, and having also noted that fire was being opened at heretofore unheard-of ranges, as well as putting in domestic orders for more of the standard modern armoured cruiser type, they would announce a competition for a new armoured cruiser of unusually large size that would be more optimised for these new long-distance fighting styles. This resulted in a flood of sketch designs from all over the place, with Vickers in particular sending out so many designs so quickly that the poor Russian naval attaché had to find himself a brand new folder and briefcase just to hold them. One design even offered a dozen 10-inch guns in 6 twin turrets. But although, as a company, they were the winner, Vickers would have to settle for producing a slightly smaller design, which the Russians had selected. This one displaced 13,500 tons, and would have a main battery of 4 10-inch guns in a pair of twin turrets, one fore and one aft, plus a dozen 8-inch guns in 6 twin turrets, 3 on either side, plus no less than 20 single 3-inch guns in deck mounts. However, lessons from the Russo-Japanese War were continuing to pour in, and so design changes began to add up while the ship began to take form. The increasing durability and size of torpedo boats meant that the anti-torpedo boat armament was upscaled from 3-inch guns to 4.7-inch guns, with no change in overall numbers. Fitting 20 of these much larger weapons meant that most of them were moved to casemates, but the effect on weight and space was still quite considerable. Additionally, armour was increased to a maximum of 6 inches on the belt, 8 inches on the turret, and 1.5 inches on the deck, and this, plus a revision to the layout of the armour to account for the new positions of the anti-torpedo boat guns, meant that one pair of 8-inch twin turrets was deleted, this being the amidships pair, leaving 4 twin 8-inch turrets instead, for a total of 8 such guns, with the turrets positioned roughly at the four corners of the superstructure. Even with this deletion, weight had still increased to just over 15,000 tons, which was now to use just under 20,000 indicated horsepower from a pair of vertical triple expansion engines to drive 2 screws for a top speed of around about 21 knots. This, therefore, was the ship that finally began to take form after August 1905, with the plan being to then build 2 sister ships in Russian yards for a total class size of 3. But shortly after the hull was launched in November 1906, came more details on the new British Invincible-class Dreadnought armoured cruisers, the first of which hit the water in spring 1907, only a handful of months after the Russian vessel, which was dubbed Rurik. With the Invincible's 12-inch guns and 25-knot top speed, it was clear that it rendered the Russian ship obsolete, and so Rurik would remain a lone ship, while the Russian engineers went back to the drawing board to consider what they should do next. Despite her obsolescence in the top tiers of fast and large warships, she was nonetheless a good and solid last-generation armoured cruiser, and she was moved to the Baltic Fleet upon completion, although her size and prestige also saw her sent out on a number of overseas voyages in the late 1900s. Her size, speed, and firepower also meant that when World War I started, she was actually still one of the most powerful Russian ships in the Baltic, since the handful of surviving pre-dreadnoughts were not enough on their own to make a decent deterrent against the Germans. This in turn led to an interesting game of shadow boxing in the Baltic. With the Gangut-class dreadnoughts still being worked on, the Russian Baltic fleet didn't have the strength to directly confront the elements of the High Seas fleet that were present east of the Kiel Canal, while the presence of the British Grand Fleet in the North Sea meant that the Germans didn't feel that they could immediately cut loose enough ships to provide an overwhelming force to deal with the Russians there and then. Instead, a series of sweeps and operations, carefully reined in by both the Kaiser and the Tsar, ensued, as neither were eager to lose face by suffering a significant naval defeat. And this meant that Rurik spent most of the first half of the war laying mines, and at one point running aground. She managed to get involved in a single major engagement, the Battle of the Åland Islands, where she managed to find and engage the light cruiser Lübeck, and then the armoured cruiser Rune, which had come to help the Lübeck out. Her gunnery left something to be desired, as Rurik, despite expending a lot of ammunition, didn't actually hit anything, But at the same time, her armour protection proved more than up to the challenge of shrugging off a number of German shells that did, in fact, actually find their mark. After that, though, it was back to mine laying and patrols, and in the course of that she managed to hit a German mine, which required repairs, but that was about where her active duty life ended. With the Russian Revolution taking Russia out of the war and the Finns becoming independent, Rurik moored up in Kronstadt and was placed in reserve. By the time the dust settled, the newly formed Soviet state stripped her of pretty much everything they thought was useful, and by 1923, neglect meant that the hull was in pretty poor condition, which left little choice but to send her to the scrappers the following year.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.